Radical Love Live, an ongoing series of podcasts and special events where we explore faith outside the boxes. Hosted by Mark Dilcom and Kelly Wilson. So, hey, Kelly.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
I'm awesome, as always. And we have a little surprise. While we were recording in studio, we got talking about a beloved friend of ours of the program. That's Maria Francesca French. She's been on our show before about one of her books, and lo and behold, we find out that she has a new book.
Yeah, 5 months after the old book. Not the old book, the previous book. It's called Reconfiguring, a Collection of Post-Christian Thoughts and Theologies, and it just came out this week, and we are going to talk with Maria here about what the new book is about, how it's built, and what it's saying.
Exactly. So we're going to welcome Maria to the phones here.
Guys, how are you? Greetings from Versailles.
We're good.
Fancy. Have you taken up residence in Versailles? Is that what's going on with you now?
You know, I wish, but no. I have one of my close girlfriends and her family lives here, so I come over for a few days at a time when I can. And her girls have a little end-of-year concert at their school, and we're at this villa, and I just stepped out to talk with you guys for a few minutes, and I'm, like, trying to download this app, and I have, like, one bar, and I'm like, oh, my God.
Well, we're glad that you could get in touch with us on the phone.
So. Absolutely. It's great to hear from you. So, Maria, we read on Facebook that you have a new book. Is this true?
I know. Can you believe it? 5 months to the day after I released the first one.
Wow.
I know. Wow.
Tell us about this. I want to know more.
Yes, I would love to tell you a little bit about it. The title of the book is called Reconfiguring, a Collection of Post-Christian Thoughts and Theologies. And, you know, even before I wrote my first book, before I started my whole publishing journey, as my, you know, theological frameworks were starting to change and shift, and I noticed, you know, various deficits in my life where maybe devotional reading used to be, or church used to be, or certain like sacred ritualistic practices. And I thought, at some point in my career, I want to write something that replaces some of that. Do you know what I mean? Because when you're still engaging faith after you've gone from the big God in the sky, and if that's a very curious phrase, if people want to know what I mean by that, they can check out my first book, Faith in the Known Way, A Post-Christian Journey, because it really, you know, talks a lot about that kind of thing from a 30,000 foot level, and really good overview of what I mean when I say that in the book, of course, as you do. I knew I wanted to offer something for people who understood the theological concepts, but wanted to go deeper in terms of what does this look like when we actually disseminate it into our lives, into various aspects, into things that are important to us that we don't want to give up, that are still ours and are still part of our story, but we engage differently, like scripture, like high holy liturgical holidays, like various doctrines and ideologies and understandings of things, things like death and love and happiness and meaning of life questions. All of this stuff starts to really change, and it's subverted by the fact that we have moved on from traditional notions of Christianity. And so what does it look like to engage morality when our underlying moral consciousness no longer looks like it used to? And it takes different shapes. So that's what this book is all about. It's about getting deep down into the weeds of some of these conversations. And rather than be, you know, a chapter book, it's actually a collection of 41 essays that I've written on a myriad of topics over the last few years. And each one reads as a letter to my reader. And I'm really kind of inviting them in to sit down, have some coffee with me. I've written them weekly over the last few years, so they're all dated. And it's kind of a fun read and also a challenging one. And it's meant to sort of, you know, invite you into meditation on, you know, some of this stuff. Or maybe you want to journal about it, or maybe you just chew on it for a little bit. You know what I mean? So, yeah, that's this new book.
Yeah. And, you know, looking through the book, I ordered a copy of it and flipping through it, the structure of it reminds me a little bit of like the wisdom literature of the Old Testament, looking at like Psalms or Ecclesiastes, where you have these kind of just reflections that aren't necessarily a long narrative, but just kind of like individual reflections that have their own texture, but you can kind of meditate on each one.
Yeah, well, that's beautiful. Thank you for saying that. And I hope people feel very invited into it. I hope people feel comforted by it. I hope people feel a sense of hospitality and belonging and community and, like, hey, we're in this together. I'm not talking at you. You're not talking at me. We're just kind of sitting in some of these really tough, shifting spaces together. You know, and sometimes in some, you know, some of the essays, I kind of give it to people straight. And in some of the essays, I end and I'm like, hey, thanks for reading. I'm not really sure to end this because this was a tough one, but hey, we're all doing this together. And it's also, it's more than just my thoughts. And this is what I'm really passionate about is, of course, I have my thoughts and my opinions on these things. I've, you know, I have a couple of master's degrees. I have my doctorate. I've been doing this stuff for years in theological and ecclesial settings. But it's so important for me to present not only what I think about this stuff, but I want people to engage with authors, theologians, philosophers, thinkers, artists, musicians, icons. Like, I am passionate about being integrative when we're talking about this work because it's just so human and it's a part of us all. And a lot of people maybe might not have the time to, I might say something and they might be interested in what I say. And maybe they want to collect some other thoughts on it from, you know, other people who have done, well, I've done it for you in this book. And a lot of my writing, I do invite in various conversation partners throughout. So because I want to give people, I want to resource people as much as they can, as much as I can, in terms of having a new imagination for the future of faith, God, and how we make meaning out of it all.
Wow, that's really powerful. So Maria, you know, I don't want to give a name to what you've created, but I'm going to use what I call my writings and what I've assembled. Now, it's more than just my, it's others as well, so I call it my framework of faith. Is this your framework, or how would you, you know, I love your what you call, what you're describing as, you know, your own writings. But what is this? Where did this all gestate and come out? How did you create this? I mean, I know you wrote it, but share that, please.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I'm working out of a radical theology framework.
Okay.
And so radical theology really sort of started, you know, getting some steam behind it with the Death of God movement in the 1960s. And, yeah, you know, what does it look like to engage God after God's death, essentially? And if, again, if people aren't familiar with Death of God or radical theology, this is going to sound all Greek to them, right? But again, in my first book, I really outline all this stuff and I invite people into this kind of thought, because something like radical theology, which really, you know, works confessional theology in terms of, whereas confessional theology would say all the things we do know about God, radical theology talks more in an apophatic way of, you know, well, where you would say God is knowable, radical theology would say, well, God is unknowable. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean we leave it to total and complete mystery. It means we're invited in to sort of this force and the spin whenever it might come upon us, and that we're actually haunted by the ghosts of Christianity, you know, long after it's passed. But we're still haunted by the ghost, which means we're still engaged in it. So we're post-Christianity. And a lot of what I do, I categorize in that post-Christian space. And whenever you read what I'm doing or hear what I'm saying, you're always going to hear this phrase post-Christianity, because we're not necessarily post-religion and we're not necessarily atheist, but we are post once we what we once knew, and we're still engaging it. And that's kind of why I use that language. But in general, I am working out of, you know, a continental philosophy background, a radical theology background, a background on, you know, deconstruction, and not so much deconstruction in terms of the pop culture conversation at the moment, but deconstruction a la scholars like Jack Derrida and Mark Taylor and John Caputo, which when you really get into what actual true deconstruction is, it is this insanely beautiful labyrinth of life and subverting and breaking down structures and being invited to new ways of being. And it's just amazing. And it's something I talk about in my first book, Safer Than the Known Way, as well. And one of the reasons why I do some of this stuff is because a lot of it has been kept in academic and ivory tower settings for a long time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the smart people of the world, they're in it, right? They talk about it. It's there. People are publishing academic books that talked about in universities and academic conferences. And when I started to engage this stuff for the first time many years ago, I just was so impressed about this needs to be brought down to a pop culture level. There's got to be a connection between all of this amazing stuff that's being done here, and it needs to somehow make it to everyday people who will never open a theology textbook.
Right.
Or who will, I mean, even if you go to seminary or you go to university, something like radical theology or philosophical ideas of deconstruction, those are like marginal classes. Those are like electives. Those are like the extra radical stuff that you're taking after you take your core, if you even get that far. And it's just been life-changing, I think, for so many wow. people who grew up in a certain, you know, connotation of belief and a certain idea of God, that are moving on from that idea of God, but not unto atheism, because they find that just as empty and just as fundamental. And so I'm trying to, I don't know, some of the people who have read the book, both fans and critics alike, have started to call me a populist, which means I'm trying to make these ideas popular.
Okay.
Popular at a pop culture level. So I yeah. guess I'll take it, because it essentially is what I'm trying to do. So.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that, because you are taking it to the people when we need it most. I love what you just said. That is so freaking awesome. And I'm going to take you back to the time that you were with us on a live event there at St. John the Divine, mm-hmm. and we had John Thetamanil there that night as well.
Yes.
You know, John is just such an inspiration. And that night he said something that is just sticks with me to this day. He says, one's atheism is only as good as one's theism. And it's like, abso-freaking-lutely, right? And you say that because yeah. I was one of those people. I was an angry atheist for years. Yeah. But it was really crummy yeah. theism that I knew. That's all I knew. And so I rejected yes. it completely, because it hurt me being a queer person myself. And I didn't, yeah. of course, I don't want to be a part of anything like that. So, you know, the work I'm doing on myself and what you're doing, this is a response to the time, because it's showing the relevance of what is the word, right? And what our entire what the faith story is about is embedded in all of this. And if we're just going to live in the past, and as you said, God is dead, well, then who's going to stick around for that? I mean, I guess people that want to use it to control others, but for the rest of us in the world, yeah. no, we want to lean in on our faith. We want to be able to connect to you know, what is this all about, and the relevance, and understanding what love means in a radical way like this.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think that the veil is being pulled back on so much right now in our world. Politics, systemic racism, injustice, you know, the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer, yep. poor, you know, any abuses within systems and institutions. And certainly the veil is being pulled back on the church, mm-hmm. you know,
yes.
both in Europe and in America, in Protestant denominations and, of course, Catholicism. And I think people have just had enough. And, you know, it doesn't always resonate with people to move on unto nothing. They want to move on to something, but
yes.
they just don't know what that something is. And
yes.
I'm not necessarily saying, hey, I have that something for you with a capital S. I'm saying with a lowercase s, there is something, and that lowercase s makes all the difference. And again, I know this is a quick conversation, and I'm speaking very, very curiously and almost in code. but the books really talk about, you know, why this may be the way forward if we can have a large enough imagination for it, because that's key.
I love it. Kelly, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I just wanted to thank you for clarifying a couple things in there, because I think there are some people who would hear post-Christian and might hear it in terms of anti-religion or anti-Christian.
Sure.
But you're really diving in and sort of like coming out the other side, rather than that it's
yeah.
not so much anti, but going with the flow. And I think people find that really interesting.
Mm.
Well, yeah, it's almost on like what's on the other side, because anti would be atheism,
yes.
or even in some cases, agnosticism, right?
Yes.
But theism versus atheism, that is like the most tired, snoozeworthy debate I can think of. It's like, hey, guys, you came late to the party. Like, nobody's debating over this stuff anymore, but somehow people still are.
Yeah.
And so it's about transcending that ping pong match conversation and saying, hey, let's leave this all in our dust and really ask questions truly of what is next and how we can still make meaning of our faith narratives in our lives, because we've invested our identity, our resources, our time, our families, you know, our lives into this amazing story that no longer looks like we thought it did, but what does it look like now? And for me, that's post-Christian. And I know usually people use that phrase, like you said, Kelly, in a very secular way. but that is not how I'm using it. And why I'm using the term post, I actually talk about in my first book, Safer Than the No Way. It's in one of the final chapters. I want to say it's maybe 7, 8, or 9, one of those off the top of my head. But this why we use this language post, and why society and culture and the full spectrum of reality, all of life and its glorious complexity, is moving so fast we can't even give it its own name. It's got to be post whatever just was, and what that looks like, and why the post in post-Christianity, and why the Christianity in post-Christianity. So yeah, it's all in the books.
I love it. So yes, this is going to be a quicker conversation, Maria. Well, clearly, we need to get you back for a future episode and break this open and go deeper. But with that said, you know, in the minute or so that we have left, what else do you want to share with Kelly, me, and the listeners of Radical Love Live?
Oh man, you guys, I think it's so funny. Every time I do a podcast, and I've done like a ton of them, especially the last several months with the books and that, I'm always asked this final question, like, what's that one word and what's that billboard? And if you had something to say, and it's so crazy because it's really, it's just so cavernous. You know what I mean? You just go deeper and deeper and deeper with the stuff. But I think if there's really one thing that I have to say, it would be there's so much hope. You know, I've seen so many people get derailed by feeling utterly destitute after their faith cannot hold anymore. After everything they've invested in this big interventionist personal big other that has lived in the sky and in their hearts and looked after them, and all of a sudden it vaporizes into the background and they're left like just standing in ruins
and looking around and just feeling so devastated that you've lost so much and not knowing what to do with that devastation, that depression, that utter disillusionment, the bitterness, the pain, the grief, the loss, all of that we feel. I just want to impart and encourage and invite people that there is such a hope for a future, that you do not have to keep running around that same circle, getting the same thing that you've always gotten, you know, with static and immovable ideas that you once believed were universal, but actually it's just a fancy name for being one-dimensional, that the future, that all that we house in the name of God is actually wide open for beautiful engagement for the future, and that you can actually engage faith after belief, and that you can engage God after God, little g God after the big g God. So thanks so much for letting me have this conversation with you guys today. I hope you'll visit my author page on Amazon and check out some of the stuff that I'm publishing and putting out there. And you can also find all the work that I do. And if you would like to engage with me a little bit personally, my website is mariafrancescafrench.com. Thanks, you guys.
So, listeners, as you can tell, Maria was she cut off on the end of that conversation, and she was talking about hope. And I don't know if there is a better way that she could have ended that. So I think maybe that was her dropping the mic on the entire conversation, that it is all about hope. So thanks again for listening. And I can think you can count on Kelly and I getting Maria back to explore further, both about her first book and then this most recent book about reconfiguring.
Yep.
So, folks, thanks again for listening into Radical Love Life, and we'll see you on the next episode.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Kelly.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Radical Love Life, co-hosted by Mark Dilcom and Kelly Wilson. All rights reserved. You can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, and other popular podcast platforms. Go to RadicalLoveLive.com to learn more about us, watch recordings of our live events, and listen to our podcast. We also invite you to check out what Kelly and Mark are doing by going to our websites. Find Kelly at KellyWilson.com and Mark at MarkDilcom.com. This is Radical Love Live, where we explore faith outside the boxes.